Hi, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. What I like to call provincial budget season is well underway in Canada, with three provinces and all three territories having already presented their budgets for 2023, and six more provincial budgets on the way in the next few days. To help us discuss some of the key funding and tax announcements in the Manitoba, Alberta, and British Columbia budgets, we're joined by returning guests, Sarah Hipson, a Director of Client Services for Ryan and MentorWorks, a Ryan company that specializes in Canadian government funding, and Jeffrey Shaw, Director of Ryan's Client Support Services Group. Hi, Sarah and Jeff. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Jim.
I guess we're not quite halfway there as far as provincial and territorial budgets go, but now is a good time, I guess, to take a look at some of the key announcements that have already been made. Let's work from Manitoba West. So maybe starting in Manitoba, from a funding perspective, Sarah, what did you see? What caught your eye?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. So, we did see the Manitoba budget be announced recently, I think later in February. And so, the key takeaways, at least when I was reviewing some of the documents there, was that, this year's funding is really kind of following up to sort of last year's funding and sort of the language around resiliency and recovery from the impacts that we saw from the pandemic in the last couple of years. And so, coming out of that, a lot of uncertainty and sort of moving towards a new fiscal year, hopefully we can talk about how some of these funding announcements line up with what programs the government there are trying to sort of position front and center. And I think, this is going to be something we consistently hear across between the three different provinces we're covering today. But, workforce is still one of the major implications or strategic priorities for provincial governments. We know that, in each of these provinces, even I would argue across Canada right now, we're seeing huge impacts to labor shortages across some of the key sectors that will allow us to be successful moving forward. And so workforce development, training programs, and different types of investments to help address skilled labor gaps in the economy in Manitoba is going to be sort of front and center in the budget here. And, that's equated and sort of numerically justified by about $100 million investment in education and training for the future workforce in Manitoba. So that's sort of the one key headliner that I want to put out there, is that we're going to see some major investments in things like, maybe apprenticeship funding programs, incentivizing students or people who are going back to school to retrain, to look at sort of critical sectors where the government is prioritizing through maybe offsets to tuition, maybe offsets to employers investing in training to address sort of skills gaps within either their existing cohort of employees or inbound sort of labor pool type hires that they're making. So that's one area for sure, front and center, that I think is going to be a huge impact in Manitoba.
I know hiring and training programs are near and dear to your heart. There was also quite a bit for agriculture, wasn't there, in this year's budget?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what we did see is that sort of primarily in Manitoba, and this is kind of consistent with what we see that drives the economy in that province, is really, agriculture funding being topped up and, in a lot of ways really refreshed and given a new face, as well as natural resource development and different types of clean technology funding in the province. So, primarily in agriculture, the real headliner of that particular announcement was the $221 million Sustainable Canadian Agricultural Partnership top-up through the provincial government. So this program, it's seen many iterations over the years. You might have known it, as CAP previously. Now it's got the sustainability lens on it. It's kind of usually five-year funding pots that we see topped up. We knew last year that this was being negotiated across the federal government as well as for each province. And so it's really great to see that that's quite a healthy budget number there for the province to kick in to match some of the federal investments being made for agriculture.
Yeah, that Canadian Agricultural Partnership is a very interesting program. Is that that's a combination of federal and provincial money. Is that correct?
Yeah, so, you know, we actually just saw some funding programs that were kind of, I would say, quite depleted from the feds that are also part of this SCAP strategy. So we saw that the AgriInnovate and AgriAssurance and those types of programs were topped up just last week. We were notified that those programs were there. There's also that provincial contribution where the local provincial governments get to decide on how that money is utilized best based on their particular demographic of agricultural priority. In Manitoba, you know, we see that through a lot of, I would say, hard science development in agriculture. So new crop production, different types of investments in determining how do we process plant-based proteins, things like that. That's a really common thing that we see coming out of Manitoba. And then in that, you know, the funding through CAP generally supports the agri-food processing sector as well. So if we have manufacturers in Manitoba who are making investments in different types of upgrades to their equipments, we're really happy to see this program top up because that's how we really drive the agricultural economy in Manitoba.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like lots of opportunities there anyway, as far as what they've talked about in the budget. I know in terms of corporate income tax changes, this year's Manitoba budget was a little bit light. I think they enhanced and extended a few corporate income tax credits for digital media, mineral exploration, and I think green energy equipment. What else did you see, Jeff? Was there any other key tax changes there?
Interesting one. It was more related to refund administration, and it doesn't just impact retail sales tax. It could be any tax administered by the province. But you know, I'll cover it from a PST perspective. So there's a disconnect between the time limits when an organization can request a refund of tax that may be paid in error, and the audit time period. So for RST purposes, the audit period is 6 years in Manitoba, and if you're going to file a refund claim, you only have 2 years to do it. And so they're going to do a little bit of harmonization here, that in the event that a refund was determined and established during an audit, that the time limit for the refund will be harmonized with the audit period that's being assessed or reviewed by the government. And so you won't run into a situation where maybe you've got a four-year audit, a refund was found related to year three, and they can't provide the refund because it's beyond the 2 years. Seems like some sort of a fairness provision. And I can only think that this came up because there must have been some significant refunds that were identified during an audit that were problematic to actually pay out. So, but other than that, kind of the status quo in terms of retail sales tax in Manitoba.
Well, that certainly sounds fair. I mean, if they're going to get you on the audit and there's a refund that would otherwise be available, they should at least allow that.
I would agree.
I guess that's a good change, yeah. Switching to Alberta, but before we get into the budget details, did anyone else find it interesting that Alberta and British Columbia released their provincial budgets on the same day, almost around the same time, maybe an hour or two different?
I'm not sure if I read into that too closely, to be honest. As I think most listeners on the podcast are aware, Alberta and BC are very different provinces with very different drivers and socioeconomic priorities that drive them. So I would say, in my humble opinion, I think it might be just coincidence.
Yeah, I think it's probably a coincidence. Although the one thing to note is that traditionally, British Columbia has their budget a week earlier. I don't know what happened this year, why it was a week later. But they traditionally do it the Tuesday after Family Day. So I'm not sure what happened this year. Maybe they need a little bit more time to kind of look at stuff. And maybe they just wanted to change it up to keep the taxpayers off balance. I don't know.
Yeah, they were both new premiers, right, in both those provinces. I was just wondering if they both know it's not a race. So But no, I think you're right, Jeff. I mean, traditionally, BC be the third Tuesday of February. We often see their provincial budget first in Canada. And Alberta normally does a fiscal update around on or before the last day of February. So it just so happened this year, I guess, that they ended up on the same date. Not sure why British Columbia was one day later, but certainly, I guess they weren't trying to steal each other's thunder. It's just kind of the way it worked out.
Yeah, one thing, Jim,
oh,
on
ahead.
That, sorry to interrupt you. I just realized as I was thinking through that question, there was a note on the BC budget specifically around how BC in particular was facing extremely high inflation. So I'm wondering if there was some additional conversation and sort of maybe trying to lean into some of the information they were getting from Bank of Canada on how they can directly impact bringing down inflation in the BC province in particular, because that was something that was noted on the budget.
Yeah, that's a good point, as was your earlier point. While those budgets came out at the same time, they're really quite different. So let's talk about that a little bit. In Alberta, again, kind of light on the corporate income tax side, Jeff. Maybe that's not a surprise. I mean, you're talking about the province with the lowest corporate income tax rate in Canada. They did sort of reiterate a previously announced income tax credit for agri-processing, and I believe that's for capital investments of at least $10 million. We're still waiting on the full details for that income tax credit, but that's expected to be released later this spring. What else did you see? Was there anything else there worth noting?
The only thing I can read into this one item around fuel tax is that there's no longer inflation in Alberta. And that's because they eliminated some fuel tax relief that was put in place because of inflation. So they had suspended fuel taxes on gasoline and diesel last year. I believe it was March 7th, 2022. And now they're going to undo that freeze or the collection of taxes. And so gasoline and diesel will become taxable again on July 1st, 2023. I'm kind of joking about inflation's gone. I think maybe what's going on there is that maybe the price of fuel has kind of stabilized now. We're not seeing the huge swings, and in particular the fairly significant upturns. And so we still see the little swings that seem to be created by the gas companies at the pump, but we're not seeing the big wholesale price changes anymore. So that's something to note, that in Alberta, you're going to have to start paying tax when you're buying gas at the pump in July. A nice Canada Day present.
Yeah, that is a nice present. I think it was fairly light. In fact, the only other thing I noted was a freeze on the education property tax requirement, which, given rising property values, I guess will result in a small decrease in the tax rate applied to various properties for that one component of property taxes in Alberta. But I think things were a little bit more interesting in terms of funding announcements. Would you agree, Sarah?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, very similar to Manitoba, I think Alberta has also experienced a labor shortage and some challenges around workforce. And so it's not a surprise to see that the number one key priority identified in budget 23-24 is hiring and training and funding to help support those labor force markets. And how do we, get the right kind of skilled talent that we need to continue to develop, you know, a more, I don't want to say a clean economy necessarily, but something that definitely approaches a more sustainable and efficient model. Even in Alberta, we're starting to see those kind of drivers. And that's the second point on my list in terms of investments that are worth noting here. Yeah, so in the emission reduction category, I think anyone who's familiar with the Alberta funding environment for businesses, a lot of the funding that we see to help drive emission reduction in the province and in a lot of the industrial activity happening in Alberta is through Emission Reduction Alberta and Alberta Innovates. And both of those are funded directly from the TIER program. And if you're not familiar with that, basically high emission emitters in Alberta pay into a fund. It's called TIER. And that combined with the methane reduction priorities as well, fund a lot of the programs to support clean tech adoption and development. So we see that they're talking more about those areas in emissions, as well as, you know, leveraging the natural resources that they have in Alberta to drive the economy, and then support that through different investments in infrastructure. I guess the last piece too worth noting, and I think, you know, this is a reflection to which I didn't mention in the Manitoba budget, but healthcare. I think, you know, from a funding perspective, you know, not a lot on this side that's worth noting from like grants or sort of how do we support SMEs in Canada. But ultimately, you know, we're seeing huge investments in healthcare in Alberta. And, you know, that's, you know, billions of dollars to help modernize that system. With that, we also saw, you know, some announcements in life sciences for funding and, you know, different initiatives around how do we support startups or scale up companies in Alberta who are contributing to life science advancements as well. So things like vaccine development or different medical devices to support us moving forward. There is funding in those categories as well. So the most notable, I'm just going to step back here too on the hiring and training for workforce. Alberta at Work, that program got topped up by $176 million for through 2026 fiscal year. And so, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how they, you know, move that money into the Alberta economy, help retrain and help support developing healthy workforce in that province. And, you know, I see that potentially through top-ups to the Canada-Alberta Job Grant, if you're familiar there, that supports small, medium-sized businesses to access skilled training. I see that through expansion of existing apprenticeship programs and funding those positions and supporting employers to bring on more apprentices. And then I also see that a lot of that in, you know, additional STEM funding in schools and starting to really shape, you know, what our students are like coming out of high school and how they're going to go into the different industries that we're hoping that they will help us stabilize.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like a lot of ongoing concern about the labor shortage, in Alberta, be it skilled trades or healthcare, many different sectors. And it kind of shows through in the funding they announced. I'm glad you mentioned the funding initiatives for reducing emissions and encouraging more technological innovations, such as the carbon capture, utilization, and storage program. I think that's very interesting in the sense that, you know, they rely so heavily on oil and gas in Alberta, but at least they're taking that step forward to say, okay, this is the direction things are going. You know, we need to look into these new technologies. So I thought that was a real positive step in terms of their budget. All of that said, totally. I mean, you talked about topping up programs, and there certainly was quite a bit of topping up going on there. Of course, the province, thanks to a huge rebound in the price of oil and gas, has a luxury of projecting a $2.4 billion surplus in this year's budget. So there was a significant amount of spending there. Now, I'm sure this has nothing to do with the provincial election looming in the fall. Does it? But
oh,
whether or not it does, yeah, I'm no politician. Whether or not it does, it's quite a contrast because you know, British Columbia, a much different situation, right? Different story going on there. They're actually forecasting a $4.2 billion deficit. Now, that said, I know they did seem to be kind of trying to maintain funding for some of the key programs. What were some of the highlights you saw in what BC announced?
Yeah, before I just want to also touch on Alberta real quick to mention that I didn't touch on it really in a lot of detail, but they also are putting $1.1 billion into agricultural production, rural communities, and environmental sustainability tied to sort of the agriculture sector. So they're not leaving agriculture behind by any means. And they're also investing in connectivity, which is a really big economic driver, as we all know. So jumping from that to BC, it's really funny because, you know, Alberta announced about almost $68 billion budget. And BC announced an $8.2 billion budget, or sorry, $81.2 billion budget, apologies. I think, you know, a lot of what the BC government is maybe recovering from is, I mentioned earlier, that inflation impact. And so, you know, they were the highest leading Canada in the inflation numbers. And so obviously there's a deficit. There's also, you know, a difference in how BC operates. We see that on the funding side as well. But this, you know, top three key priorities from the budget that I noted that are worth mentioning here, healthcare, obviously, similar to the other two provinces. That was the number one, sort of one and two was that, in hiring and training for skills gap. The second bullet here, which is really where I'm going to hone in, the second and third, is around economic stability and clean tech funding. And, you know, within that, I think there was about $1.4 billion dedicated specifically for clean technology development, supporting the cluster of clean tech development that BC is so well known for. And then on top of that, developing and generating the jobs and the skilled talent to actually be able to support those industries as they invest heavily into growing them. The third one is natural resources and critical minerals. So that's part of a larger strategy, but ultimately, you know, we know BC is known for their forests and their lumber. That industry has taken a bit of a hit in this, you know, last little while. And so I'm expecting that there's going to be a lot of things announced to support recovery there, maybe reskilling of workforce where there were curtailments that we saw. So we're keeping our eyes open and monitoring those for any clients that we have in BC. But in addition to that, the really key piece here that I wanted to sort of highlight is that the critical minerals strategy that they're talking about developing in BC is actually a little bit late to the ball game. With Ontario and different provinces announcing that strategy sort of last year or before. But it's really good to see that BC is getting on board, because with their really strong clean technology driving economy they're building, they're going to have a lot of sort of those clean technology companies that are going to be on the forefront of helping us to roll out sort of a more sustainable approach to how we address critical minerals and to support that EV pipeline and you know, EV being electric vehicles, for those of you that aren't using the jargon. So on that sort of EV note in BC, one of the sort of key pieces that I found really, really interesting is that they put about $44 million in the budget specifically for building out the clean tech ecosystem or economy in BC. But on top of that, they've also topped up the Clean BC Go electric commercial vehicle pilot program, where they're supporting commercial and industrial type businesses to actually fund the replacement of high emitting diesel or gas vehicles and converting them into EV or other types of alternative low emission or no emission projects. We actually had a client benefit significantly from this. And, you know, it's really exciting to see this move forward, because that's going to be a way for us to sort of, you know, close the gap on, you know, we're doing all this on the mining and critical mineral side, but how do we support businesses to actually make those investments? Because they're so significant, as we know.
Yeah, I can't really say that's a surprise, Sarah. I mean, British Columbia has always been a leader in Canada as far as any kind of climate change initiative. So good to hear that they're continuing to do that and introducing lots of new programs along those lines. I guess we should talk about the tax situation a little bit, Jeff. Again, very little on the corporate income tax side. I think they extended their digital media tax credit for another 5 years. But I know there were a couple other indirect tax initiatives. What did you see there?
Well, I mean, a lot of tinkering, but with the exception of one item, I'm looking at things that may be potentially going to drive up or increase sales tax revenue. There's some amendments that are going to be introduced related to online marketplace facilitators. You know, this is all kind of the buzz in a lot of jurisdictions in terms of sales tax. And so, you know, they're going to make all online marketplace services taxable, even if they're used to facilitate non-taxable type services. And they're also going to amend the determination of a marketplace service, you know, where it's taxed, and align them with the federal place of supply rules. I can only imagine that, you know, the there's marketplace facilitator rules that are in place federally, and also separate ones provincially, they must be running into some situations where maybe the two taxes are applying at the same time and they didn't really want that. And then some other tinkering, saying that they have to collect tax on all commercial sales. I would have thought that any marketplace facilitator is making a commercial sale. I'm not sure why they felt that, but there must have been some problems. Rules to help determine when the marketplace facilitator is providing a service. So I would imagine down the road, they're going to come out with probably a list of particular type things that marketplace facilitators do, so that they should be collecting tax on that. And then they're going to tinker with some of the definitions of the key terms, like online marketplace facilitator, online marketplace seller, and online marketplace services. And I can only think that those changes are going to broaden the application of these rules as opposed to narrow them down. So yeah, some tinkering there.
I was going to say, you're probably right. Tinkering. Usually when they clarify in British Columbia, it's to broaden the tax base a little bit, right? Catch more revenue. So good point. These are the rules they just brought in last year, right? These marketplace. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Makes you wonder if maybe
they've been leaning that way, for a few years, and now, they're kind of jumping on the bandwagon with Quebec and the federal government. And then of course, you end up with Saskatchewan and Manitoba also wanting to kind of jump in with British Columbia. So they've kind of been leaning that way. I guess, in terms of all this marketplace facilitator type stuff and rules, I'm still a little disappointed that they didn't, all these provinces didn't get together and come with one coordinated approach to make it easier for the taxpayer, not necessarily the person buying from these entities, but maybe from the Amazons and the Wayfarers and those sort of things, so that they can just register once and then have the taxes distributed throughout the country as applicable, rather than having a bunch of piecemeal different things that you have to try and figure out after the fact. It just seems it would make more sense to have done it that way. But
I think you make a really good point. Yeah, no, I think you make a really good point. It would be a lot easier to administer these rules if there was some consistency instead of the patchwork evolution we have going on right now. Definitely makes it a little tricky.
We want non-residents to collect the tax, but we're making it more difficult by maybe forcing them to register 5-6 different jurisdictions, which doesn't make sense. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now.
No, you can stay right up there if you'd like. That's great. Any other key changes in the BC budget?
There's an exemption for automated external defibrillators. I found that a little bit baffling, but I mean, because I know when you go into major markets, you tend to find them all over the place, sporting facilities, airports, the government agencies, probably even in schools and universities and that sort of thing. So at first I went, I'm not really sure. Like, haven't they all been bought now? But I think the comment that they made was it was to encourage the supply of these devices throughout the province. So I'm wondering if they're having difficulties making sure that they're throughout the province. So maybe in rural areas, I'm wondering if maybe in some of the First Nations areas they're having problems, and maybe this is a way that they can get it in. Although, if it is in a First Nations area, you would think that it would have been not taxable anyway. But I guess it depends on who's buying it, right? If it's a First Nations corporation versus an individual or an Indian band, that may make a difference. So they must have noted that there are areas where there's a gap, and so they're trying to eliminate those gaps.
Yeah, I agree with you. That is very interesting. I think it's hard to imagine that the PSD is any kind of impediment to getting those devices, because they're so important and critical. But maybe they just want to make sure that's not a possibility. But I agree with you in the sense that those things are popping up everywhere anyway. So was it really necessary to put in a special exemption? I'm not sure, but I guess it doesn't hurt.
And I guess the last thing to talk about is some amendments to just clarify whether some other taxes are part of the tax base for PST purposes. One is they're going to make it clear that GST is not part of the tax base. I always thought that was the case, but there must have been some anomalies that created a problem, but nonetheless, it's probably good to have it stipulated. I think the most important one, though, is that they're going to declare that the federal luxury tax is not part of the tax base for PST purposes. Remember, the federal luxury tax applies to aircraft and boats and vehicles over certain dollar amounts. I think that's going to be an important thing for the purchase of vehicles, which are subject to a luxury aspect in British Columbia from PST purpose. And so there's people, you know, making statements that really there's a double hit in British Columbia with the PST and the federal luxury tax. And so I think that the original standpoint was that the federal luxury tax would be subject to the PST, and they're now saying, well, that's not the case. And that's probably to reflect that anyone buying an expensive car in British Columbia is going to get hit hard with taxes. That's pretty clear to me.
It certainly sounds like it. Yeah, at least those clarifications aren't expanding the tax base like we talked about before.
True. Yet. What else? So then shifting away from retail sales tax, we go and look at the carbon tax. They're going to increase the carbon tax rate, and that's really so that they can stay compliant with the federal carbon tax, carbon pricing regime or backstop. So that will increase by $15 per ton of carbon dioxide equivalent. I don't think that's a surprise that, you know, that's been happening yearly. But what is going to be a bit of a change, and this may be important for large business or large emitters, is they're going to have a new pricing regime for large emitters. Basically, they will become exempt of the carbon tax, and they will be taxed based on meeting output-based pricing system thresholds, I guess, for a lack of a better word. So if they stay under the threshold, they probably won't have to pay the carbon tax. But if their emissions exceed the threshold, they're now going to have to pay tax. So I think that's an important change for large emitters. And those changes are looking to take place a year from now, so April 1st, 2024. And then, you know, I think we've already talked about agriculture being important in British Columbia. There's some targeted relief from the carbon tax for greenhouse growers, where they're using propane and natural gas to heat the greenhouse to improve crop production. And so that will be applicable to greenhouses that are holding fruit, vegetable, bedding plants, landscaping plants, ornamental plants, flowers, and tree seedlings. And they say that's going to be quite beneficial to the industry. And so, you know, I'm not saying that that's going to reduce the price or the cost of food, but it may help prevent food prices from getting even higher because we're eliminating the carbon tax there. So those are some interesting changes from the carbon tax or fuel tax side of things.
Yeah, those changes certainly are very interesting, especially the one you mentioned for large emitters. You know, for British Columbia to drop its carbon tax for those entities, and of course they were the first in Canada with a carbon tax, and move to an output-based pricing system, that's a big shift in strategy for sure. I guess the question would be, does that mean Alberta was right with their approach to carbon tax? I'll let the two premiers sort through that one. But certainly, very very interesting. Thank you, but Jeff.
It could be.
Those are great summaries.
It could be. You know, we are seeing some other jurisdictions making suggestions about large emitter taxation related to carbon, and so maybe that's a growing trend. That's the way they're going to go. I'm sure they're getting beaten over the head by business about the carbon tax. They're certainly getting beaten over the head by a lot of other politicians, the opposition politicians. So, and certainly consumers, they are too. So maybe it's just a reflection of some of those fights that are going on.
Yeah, very good point. You know, I just want to circle back quickly to the funding side of these budget announcements. And, you know, whenever the provincial budgets come out, it always reminds me of just how many government grant and loan programs are out there. And they all have their own eligibility criteria and limitations and application windows. and various other details that need to be followed if you're going to get funding. So my question, Sarah, is like, how do you keep track of it all?
Yeah, great question, Jim. So, I mean, you know, we've got 15 years in this space. You know, we've been identifying, monitoring, qualifying, and supporting our clients to be able to access the different incentives from a value add perspective for that period of time. And we continue to do that entering into fiscal 23. And I think, you know, mainly what it comes down to is having the right team behind you, supporting you. Like you said, everything comes from a different place, and making sure that, you know, you've got a team of you know, whether it be internal or external resources that can keep you abreast of all of the sort of important programs or incentive opportunities that are available to you is really key to success. And so I would say, you know, MentorWorks and the team at Ryan, you know, we're really able to support you in that regard. And if anyone wants some support and wants to sort of go through a process that I call a funding discovery process, then we can kind of, you know, highlight what things are available, what programs might be a good fit for different initiatives you have coming down the pipe. And, you know, that's the best way to get started and get the right people in your corner.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. I was just going to ask you, if a listener wants to get in touch with Ryan because they think they might be eligible for, you know, a program or one of the programs you mentioned today, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So either you can, you know, jump on our website, it's mentorworks.ca. On there, you're going to find, you know, a ton of ways to get in touch with our team. If you want to reach out to myself in particular, you can reach out to me via email, Sarah, S-A-R-A, at mentorworks.ca. You know, there's a lot of different ways on that website to get a hold of us. Feel free to reach out. Happy to have a conversation.
Okay, sounds great. And Jeff, I think I know the best way for a listener to contact Ryan if they have a Canadian tax question, but please go ahead and remind us.
Sure, there's really two best ways. The first best way is to call our tax direct line at 1-800-667-1600. And the second best way is to send an email to taxdirect@ryan.com. And we have a team that's dedicated to answer your questions as they come in. And we do endeavor to get back to you within 24 hours, although I have to keep in mind that sometimes the question is very complex and it may take a little bit longer than that to get an answer. But generally speaking, we'll have a response to you within 24 hours.
Very good. Sarah, Jeff, thank you so much for your time today in reviewing and summarizing the key announcements from those budgets and also for your insights. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good day.
You too. That concludes this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. Please join us next time when we'll cover the remaining provincial budgets, including Quebec, Saskatchewan, and Ontario. As always, you can find more information about significant tax changes and government funding announcements on our websites at ryan.com/Canada and mentorworks.ca. And please let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.